Wouldn't your life be easier if you didn't have to deal with, well, anyone? They always say, it's you versus you. But you know that it's really them who keeps you stuck. Whether it's your in-laws, your partner, your boss, HR, the customers, your business partner. There are so many other people in your life that if you could just sort them out, then you'd finally be cruising on Easy Street, right? Welcome to Change Made Easy. Change is hard. We make it easy. My name is Paul Levitin, and I am a certified behavior change specialist and coach, and I've been working in the field of behavior change for over a decade. My goal is to help you understand the science and master the art of change. Because when change is easy, improving your health, wealth, relationships, and leading a happy, fulfilling life becomes automatic. Today, my guest is Christine Scott. Christine is a conflict resolution coach, but she didn't start out that way. Christine started her career working in group homes and running meal programs for the unhoused in her home city of Seattle. It was only then that she realized that she had to become a master at conflict resolution so that she could navigate the tricky, sometimes even potentially dangerous interactions that she was a part of on a daily basis. There were constant fights, threats, and thefts, and Christine began to observe the people around her. These are folks who had lived outside and dealt with threats on their literal lives every day. And through observation, she slowly learned to stop reacting from a place of fear and trained herself to respond compassionately. That led to years spent improving her conflict response and also training others to do the same in the shelter, which now she has grown into her full-time business called Seattle Conflict Resolution. And the reality is, whether you work in a homeless shelter, a group home, or an office building, or you're a stay-at-home parent, conflict is not the exception, it's the rule. You aren't going to be able to get away from everyone, and you will not be able to avoid conflict. So your best bet is to learn to navigate it. Today, Christine is going to give you advice on how to be conflict ready and tell you how you can take back control during high emotion moments. You'll also learn what the conflicts you have with others is saying about you and what's going on in your subconscious, which to me was pretty eye-opening. Better navigating interpersonal conflicts will definitely make it easier to navigate both your personal and professional change journeys. So let's dive into this conversation with Christine Scott. So Christine, explain for me and for listeners how you went from running a meal program to becoming interested and learning about conflict resolution and how those things are related.
Oh, thank you. Great question, Paul. So I started off in social services just because I wanted to help people and I kind of had a need to be needed, which is not a really good way to start. But conflict would come up as I'm running this meal program or later group homes and shelters. And I was terrible at it. Absolutely awful. I would avoid conflict or I'd get way too aggressive with it. And I didn't know how to get in between those two extremes. And fortunately, I kind of had to. And many of the nonprofits that I was associated with, I was the only program staff. So I had to figure it out. And fortunately at the time I was working with young people who lived on the streets and they had a lot more experience with conflict than I did because their lives depended on it. So they became my greatest teachers and my unwitting guinea pigs as I advanced my skills.
Yeah, it's very interesting and makes a lot of sense. Group homes, social services, these are places where emotions can run high and where conflict can pop up for a variety of different reasons. So what are some of the tools that you teach or that we can use to de-escalate ourselves mm-hmm. when we start to feel negative emotions taking over?
Mm-hmm. There's like three different ways I can go with that question. One are like, what are the things you need to have in your own life so that you're conflict ready? right? And then the other is, in the moment, what can you do so you don't get all whacked and do that too big, too small thing that I was talking about, right? And then the third level is like, how do you even define conflict and what resolution looks like? So with your permission, I'll just jump into that very first thing about what needs to be in your life, right? And what I encourage people to do is look at conflict as like a flashing light that something is not working either in this relationship or in this system. And or I have an unhealed wound that is like saying, hey, I need some attention over here. For example, I was raised in a house where anger could be used in a way that hurt other people. So as you can imagine, here I am running a meal program. Somebody's really angry and much physically larger than me, perhaps male. Wow, I'm going to have some unhealed stuff from my childhood that's going to tell me there's no way I can handle this conflict. Somebody's going to get hurt. Right? So conflict is just that little voice of saying whatever you haven't taken care of in your own self is going to feel extra, extra scary, which is why so many of us hate conflict and want to avoid it because we're all walking around with these unhealed wounds, right? So like on your own personal self level, a lot of what I teach is like identifying those wounds, those places that feel extra scary, getting support, and then coming back to look at the conflict itself more objectively, right? And then as far as managing our own physical reaction to conflict and all of that biology that's screaming because our lizard brain has triggered all of this adrenaline and this cortisol, right? We know what that feels like. That sympathetic nervous system hijack is called fight, flight, freeze, and now fawn. Like we can go in these different places and literally be on a level of autopilot that we don't even cognitively understand because our prefrontal cortex is not running the show. And we can rationalize it later, but at the time, we're essentially acting out of our mammal impulses, which is why I was way too big, way too small. I was doing stuff that my mammal wanted me to do without realizing neither of these things is going to work. Right. And so when that's coming up, I encourage people like, here's the list of things that you will notice in your body if your sympathetic nervous system is taking over. You're going to feel an elevated heart rate. Your breathing is going to change. You're going to be looking for the thing that's going to kill you. And your brain will feel like it's running really fast, but it's running really fast in a way that's kind of a conspiracy theory box all by itself, right? Like, what's the thing that's gonna kill me? You don't notice your resources, no new information is going in, and your vocabulary actually reduces down to like a pretty basic level. Right? So when you see those things happening, you very likely need to do what I call a reset. And there's some really great research out there that shows five deep breaths actually expand the nerve endings that are attached to the outsides of your lungs, right? And when these nerve endings just get this far apart from each other, they reset to the parasympathetic nervous system, right? That's an automatic thing that your body does. But most of us, when we're having this stress reaction, we actually start to breathe more shallowly. So, you've all heard the oh, take five breaths and like, oh, that's so stupid. But no, we now have the science behind that actually working for people. So there's things you can do for your body in the moment. And I also encourage people, be in charge of the terms with which you engage with this conflict. So if somebody has suddenly dropped this demand on you and you're just like feeling like a cornered animal, just by virtue of saying, wow, that's a really great question. Can I give that my undivided attention in like 5 minutes from now? Now you're no longer the cornered animal because you've just set the terms of how you're going to handle the situation and when you're going to handle the situation. And your body just like turns off the alert system because you know, like, hey, I have some agency here. So take 5 minutes away, take five steps back. Just set the tone and the terms of how and when you're going to handle that situation. And if it still feels overwhelming, get support. Like, look at what is it about this that's got me so freaked out? Because oftentimes our body will be telling us one thing, but objectively we see, the situation doesn't actually look lethal, right? And that's where we might need to pull in a friend or somebody to say, I'm having a major freak out. Let's talk through what's going on here. And it's okay to admit to the person who might be presenting as your agitator, like, hey, I want to give this all of my attention and all of my resources. And for whatever reason, I don't have that right now. And can I get back to you? People really feel respected and seen when you let them know, like, this is important to me and I want to give it my full and my best self.
Hey, real quick, we'll be back to the show in just a few seconds. But right now, I have to ask a huge favor from you. If you're getting value out of this episode, take 2 seconds and share it with a friend. Right now, hit the little share button in whatever app you're listening and send it in a text. Seriously, just hit the button and spread the love. If you like what you're hearing, that's the best way to show support. Maybe you're like Eliza Kay, who said, "This podcast is both warm and inviting, but real enough to push and motivate me." Or you're like Dalton, who said, "Paul is an amazing host and his podcast is a must listen." Don't you want to share this awesomeness with your friends and family? Don't be a gatekeeper. It only takes a minute and it helps me grow. It helps me reach a new audience. And you seem like a genius friend who recommends awesome podcasts. We all win. So click share. And if you really want to show love, take a screenshot of this episode right now and tag me in your stories on social media, and I'll shout you out on an upcoming episode. All right? Go send that text, and now back to the show.
Yeah, I love that you said give yourself that agency back by kind of setting the tone for the conversation to come. And as you're going through this, we have that as you said parasympathetic response, fight, flight, freeze, fawn. Our heart rate elevates. You said we lose capacity to even think about different words. Our vision narrows. A lot of quote unquote negative things happen in our body that make us worse potential decision makers in those high tension moments of conflict. But something I've also heard you talk about is that high tension moments can be a positive, and we can maybe harness that charge. So how do we start to take that theoretical negative and turn it into something positive that we can grow from?
Oh, great question, Paul. A lot of people hire me for their customer service teams because they're really interested in actually monetizing these relationships, right? The Wall Street Journal did a great piece on if you have an angry customer who's behaving really poorly, you can actually convert them into the most loyal customer in your customer base. And that is because they have shown you their absolute worst self. They have shown you all of their uglies, right? And if you have the capacity to hold that container and know, hey, it's not about me. This is not personal. They're having a rough day. Can I create some type of connection? Because this is when they're raw, they're vulnerable. They really don't have time for the social niceties that can cover up tension, right? They're just letting you have it. And if you can lean in and just say, wow, I see that this has really got you worked up. I'm here to help you. What does that look like for you? Like let them own the solution, right? And do things like that that show that you're not meeting their emotional state, that you're just kind of keeping the edges safe for them to have their big feelings. And that you trust that there is a future to this connection, right? And you trust that when they work through those big feelings, that whatever they need is going to happen. People love that. We're all hungry for that. We came out of lockdown with so much anxiety, so much addiction, so much problems socializing with others, that for somebody to kind of be the bigger person, the more resilient, emotionally stable person in that exchange gives them a level of being seen and building trust in your direction that's really powerful. And it doesn't take long. A lot of people is like, well, I don't have the resource to have somebody scream at me for 10 minutes. The truth is intense emotion rarely last longer than 25 seconds, like the real big, like off-pouring of big emotions, right? Like we just don't have it in our bodies to have emotions longer than that. If people go on longer than that, that's usually grandstanding, which we can handle in a very similar way, but it's, we just have to remember, like, actually we do have the capacity and we can choose moment for moment how much capacity we have, because there's always an exit plan. We always have the capacity to say, you know what, I might not be the right person to help you. Let me go find somebody who is, right? We, as long as we always have that exit plan, we can give this person our attention and hopefully some direction towards what is it that you need right now.
Such an interesting point that you brought up there about, you know, using the customer service example of someone calls in and they're irate and they're mad, and that person having the opportunity to become your best customer because, as you said, they're showing you their lowest low. And my thought is that you're so right. No one wants to show up to other people like that. No one wants to be the person yelling or screaming or cursing at someone or just being rude. We've all been raised not to do this. We all know that it's not a good look. We all see other people doing that and go, ugh, I would never do that. We see the parent yelling at their kids in the grocery store or something like that, and you go, oh my gosh. And then you're a parent with kids and you go, okay, now I understand why people are doing that. So there's a level of understanding, but I like the way that you flip that, because now you go, if you can meet that person there, you have the opportunity to show up for them so powerfully and make an ally out of an enemy. So in a business world, this is how you create raving fans and customers, because you solve that person's problem that had them calling up and going off on you over the phone. And now you're the solution to this huge problem. But also in our personal lives, in your professional lives with your boss or anything like that, if you can look at it as like, if someone is being short with me, angry with me, whatever, it's like, it's more telling about them than it is about me. And understanding that, I think, is a big step in the right direction, but it also brings up its own challenge, because you mentioned that a lot of this is based on emotion, and emotions run very hot. And in order to not get sucked up into someone else's emotion, we have to have control over our own emotions. So how do we start to make sure that, again, we don't get sucked into this whirlwind where someone else is, they might run out of steam in 25 seconds, but they trigger me and now I trigger them back. And now we're in this negative spiral.
Yep. You're so right. I've seen and been a part of that tango many times, especially with my teenage daughter. Imagine that. One thing I tell people is focus on the unmet need. So for example, when my teenage daughter is really upset that I've set this really harsh boundary with her, I could focus on like, yeah, I know you don't want to do that right now. But underneath those surface level needs, we all have these deeper level needs. And the first one, obviously, on Maslow's hierarchy is safety, right? We need to feel like we're safe. And you know, what we do with our bodies actually communicates safety. If I have that conversation with my daughter with my shoulders squared and blocking her access to the exit door, I'm actually communicating that your safety is at risk. So at the very most basic level, we need to use our bodies, our tone, our faces to be neutral and non-confrontational so that everybody feels safe. And then the next set of needs above that are usually lower than the thing that they're arguing or railing about, and that is validation and belonging. If we can offer somebody validation, like, wow, yeah, I'd feel that too. If somebody just out of nowhere told me I had to like clean my room, I could see how this is kind of shocking for you right now, right? Yeah, that's a very normal response. I would totally feel that if this felt like it was totally out of the blue. Okay. So now I've validated the energy of that concern. And we can move from there because she feels seen. She feels like I understand why this request just feels so sudden. Or a sense of belonging, like, hey, this is an agreement that we all made as a part of belonging to this shared household, and da 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 da. And everybody has a role to play, and we support each other in this, right? And so whether you focus on validation or belonging, typically those things will allow that upset person to feel like, yeah, I have a path forward where I am not being threatened here.
What does conflict do to confidence?
Good question. Well, as you know, everything that feels unresolved or unfair lives in our brain. We have a long, long list running in the back of our brain about the time that my boss did this and I had to do that, or the time that somebody, whatever, right? And so we've often filed unresolved conflict as a failing on ourselves or a failing around status or power or rank. And I use those three words differently, as far as like, we often assume that we don't have enough power. So for example, when I had to ask somebody to leave Teen Feed because he was too old to be there, I walked into that conflict with the myth that there was, number one, going to be only one winner in this confrontation, which isn't true, right? So we talked about, let's redefine conflict, right? I believe there's only going to be one winner. I believe that I was terrible at conflict because I was always, you know, way too big, way too aggressive, or way too like diminutive. So I believed I was terrible about conflict. That was my second myth. And the other myth I had is like, because he's male, I don't have the power I need to get him to comply with this age limit. Right. So I was running into this conflict with these three myths operating. So in this situation, I asked another guest to stand behind me because he was a well-muscled male, right, who was young enough to be there, but big enough to stand behind me as I asked this other guy to leave. So Ron agrees to stand behind me, and I go talk to this gentleman, and sure enough, he's flipping me a lot of crap. And out of nowhere, this fist goes flying over my shoulder and pops him in the face. Because that was Ron's understanding of what it meant to back me up, was that he would physically assault the guy on my behalf. Whoa, wait, yeah, that's true for street code, but that wasn't like what I was looking for, right? And so those three myths did not serve me. That gentleman who was too old to be there did not get any information about where he could go for food, right? So his unmet need for food just landed him a physical assault. What he learned is that he could come to Teen Feed if he had strong enough people, because I now have a bouncer there, right? And what I learned after I untangled that whole thing is that I actually had a lot more power than I was claiming, that I let my conditioning as a woman tell me I didn't, right? So I've redefined power since then, and now I define power as when we've healed our wounds enough to make them work for us, as opposed to going, oh no, I'm a woman, I can't do that, right? So I just had to flip that sucker on its head. That doesn't mean my conditioning, it just is no longer there. I've been socialized as female, but it does mean that I have more awareness that, well, that's all about rank. You know, we have this rating system that we use in our country, that this race is better than that race, and that this level of wealth is better than that level of not wealth, right? Like, we have all of these things that we confuse as power, when really it's just the social hierarchy that we've all inherited that isn't serving anybody. And so I really encourage people, like, look at the difference between that and your actual power, right? And that's really been a game changer for me, in undoing that myth. And then the myth of only one winner. Conflict's not resolved until both people feel it's resolved. And once you look at that analysis, like, oh, if my goal is for both people to feel resolved, and that there's not just one winner, because that's what feels unresolved about conflict. That's why we hate conflict so much, is that we feel like there's only one winner. And they did a study of people in the workplaces, like, oh, you know, you put off that difficult conversation. And here's some interesting data about it. 80% of workers are avoiding one difficult conversation at work. And when they do finally, after much delay, tackle these terrible conversations, it's 6 months to 2 years later. And then when they polled these people, well, so after the difficult conversation, do you feel like things were resolved? 76% said yes, if they were having a difficult conversation with somebody that reported to them. So in other words, when I have my, you know, my status as your boss, and I say, hey, Paul, I think you should blah, 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 and I really don't like it when you blah, 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 76% of us are later going, yeah, that went really great with Paul, right? But when the conversation is with somebody you report to, guess what the results were? 46%, right? So again, it's that confusion about we take these things of social hierarchy and we assume, that conflict just, it sucks. I'm not good at it. It's never going to get resolved to my satisfaction.
Yeah, thinking of things in win-win rather than I have to win and they have to lose, or if they win, that means I lose, is a big mm-hmm. paradigm shift that I think can help a lot of people. And as you're going through that, it's interesting because you had the, now in hindsight, opportunity, benefit of going through all this in your work, in your social work. I'm sure at times it didn't feel like that when it was happening, but now it's like, okay, I had to go through this. I was forced into this arena and mm-hmm. was forced to put in the reps. We know that repetition and practice builds growth, and you learn how to handle conflict through handling conflicts over and over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And because you've done it so many times, you have that skill. But how do we start to hone that skill when the only time we are getting into conflicts is seldom and far and few between, and we're trying to avoid it at the same time? So how do you actually start to put in the reps so that you can become mm-hmm. better at this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really encourage people, take a look at whatever difficult conversations you're delaying or putting off or sidestepping. A lot of us would rather not invite a friend over than set a clear boundary around, hey, I really need you, this visit to only last an hour, right? Like, we'll just not invite them over anymore. That's so much easier than worrying about them overstaying, right? So I encourage people, first look at places that you could set and communicate a clear boundary so that this relationship can grow. Because conflict is just a sign that this relationship is ready to go to the next level and that you're going to have to do something maybe uncomfortable to get it there, right? So when people start looking at it that way, they realize, wow, I have quite a list of deferred conversations in my life, places that I could set good boundaries. And if they are struggling to identify those, I always say, think about the last time you felt somebody stepping on your toes, the last time you felt unseen, not valued, that you didn't belong. And those are probably places that your boundaries are being underutilized. And again, an opportunity for that conversation. And then once they have that list of people or conversations that they need to have, I say, which of these feels like it's the easiest one? Start there. Get clear. What's my goal? If I really want to move this relationship forward, and I really want to bring this person in closer, what would that look like? And then when you communicate your request or your boundary within that envelope, people are like, hell yeah, right? Because you're basically inviting them into a closer connection. And for you, this looks like you're going to have to put up with my weirdness around our visit not being longer than an hour. That's just, you know, that's just my Eurocentric calendaring thing. I'm sorry. And that is impacting you, right? You make the boundary about what you need, not about them being wrong. And once people see that in like these small victories with these easier conversations, they start getting more ready to handle it with the other things. You're right, because our capacity to do this is practice. It just takes repetition. And it's like public speaking. The more you do it, the easier it gets. And the better you get at it, your relationships actually improve, right? Because you're going into every conversation with this life vest called boundaries, right? You now know that you can handle it if things don't go the way you want it to go.
That last pit part, I think, is something I'd like you to expand on a little bit, because my natural question as you're talking about this, and what I would think listeners' question as well, as this might be my ego talking, but I go, yeah, but what about when it's not me, it's them? Right. I can practice conflict resolution as much as I want, but it's my mom, it's my boss, it's my daughter, it's my son, it's whoever, that they're the issue. So how do we start to, if, as you use the analogy of a tango before, it takes two to tango, what happens when it's the other person who is the issue and I'm an angel?
Oh yeah, totally. So many times I've been totally right and my daughter totally wrong. Right. And so if I'm to take my own advice, what I do is I look at the places that my emotions get big. What are the conversations? What are the conflicts I've had with her that I feel like I'm losing my cool? Well, that I feel like I'm not showing up as the most resourced, and capable person in the conversation. And if I can be honest about that and journal and process that, then I know, like, okay, where do I need to set that self-protection boundary, that life vest? Because we'll always have somebody. We'll always have that one person, that one relative that we're just like, oh. And it's just this beautiful opportunity. And, you know, there are some relationships that I frankly predict will never get closer or stronger. But that doesn't stop me from being an invitation. That doesn't stop me from attempting to say to that person, hey, this is a thing that I would really like. You know, and I've heard from members of my extended family a pretty consistent no thank you to my invitation for that next level. And it breaks my heart a little bit, you know, but all we can do is try. I really encourage people just be the invitation and see what happens. And if they're not ready to try out this new thing and respect this new way of you showing up, then you're just going to like stay maybe not in their inner circle, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Be the invitation, I think, is a really elegant way to put it. I think I appreciate you offering that. And I think that it saddens people, just like it can sadden you, like you said. But the reality is that we have to be okay when we put ourselves out there, that the result is going to be the other thing. When you put yourself out there to that family member, to that coworker, to that boss, and you hope that you are extending an olive branch and that it will be accepted and that things will go one way, we have to do that with the full understanding that although we would like it to go that way, there is an equal probability that it will go the other way. And we have to be okay with that as well. And this is with everything in life. You have to be okay with either side of the coin. If not, you're setting yourself up for disappointment and bad things, because there is always an equal chance that things won't work out as that there is that they will. So I just want to offer that to people listening. I think that it's a great thing to do and to start to push those boundaries a little bit of what you're comfortable with and the conversations you're comfortable with having. But understand that sometimes it doesn't go the way that you hoped. And that's okay too, because everything is okay. We're all going to be okay in the end. So I really appreciate that, Christine. And the last question that I have for you is the same question that I ask every guest, which is, if you had one action step to leave listeners with right now, today, it can be about conflict resolution. It can be about literally anything. As soon as this episode ends, as soon as they take their headphones off to start living a happier, healthier life, what would it be?
It would be to look at those difficult conversations that they have delayed and just list them out. And next to the ones that seem a little bit easier, write a, why would I like this relationship to shift? Right? What would it look like? What would I benefit if I got a deeper connection with this person where they really saw me, really saw that I didn't really like this particular behavior? Or maybe I'm holding on to a thing that I wronged them somehow. And rather than admitting that I wronged them, I'm just using the tension in the relationship to beat myself up and make myself feel bad, right? Like if either of those are happening, just imagine like, what would it look like for this to go better? And then see if you can, right? Just see if you can. Just try it out with a lot of support and a lot of thinking about how I want to extend that invitation into closeness. And if people want to, they can email me. I have a boundary writing guide that will kind of help talk them through how to communicate boundaries in a way that's life-affirming.
That's amazing. And I appreciate you offering that up to listeners. I will include Christine's email in the show notes for anyone who wants to grab that guide from her. Christine, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you, Paul. It's been great.
Before you go, I have one favor to ask. If you got value from this episode, then take a moment and leave a rating and review in the podcast app you're listening on. If you like what you hear and you want me to continue creating more episodes, getting more awesome guests so that you can learn and make your change journey easier, then this is the best way that you can show support. You can leave an awesome review like Eliza Kay, who said, "This podcast is both warm and inviting, but real enough to push and motivate me." Thank you, Eliza. Or like Dalton, who said, "Paul is an amazing host and his podcast is a must listen." So thank you, Dalton. And thank you to all of the over 100 people who have taken the time to rate the show 5 stars on iTunes. It only takes a minute and it helps me so much to grow. It helps me reach a new audience and helps encourage me to know that this is helping someone, which just feels good. All you have to do is go to the show page in whatever app you're listening to and hit the little 5-star rating. Boom, that's it. And if you really want to show love, take a screenshot when you do it and tag me in your stories on social media, and I'll shout you out on an upcoming episode. Okay, go leave that rating, and I'll see you back here every Tuesday and Thursday with new episodes of Change Made Easy.